Today's Community News Makes Conversation, the Great Southern Sounds of Melbourne, 88.3 Southern FM.
You're listening to The Space Show with Andrew Rennie. Now, I must apologise, we don't have that in Italian, because Paolo Nespoli is an Italian astronaut with the European Space Agency. Between 2010 December 15 and 2011 May 24, he spent 159 days as flight engineer aboard the International Space Station. This scientific and engineering research facility orbits the Earth every 92 minutes at an altitude of some 400 kilometres. Last week, another Italian astronaut was launched to begin a six-month stay on the space station. His name is Luca Parmitano. From Rome, Paolo Nespoli provided the commentary. In doing so, he was able to provide a unique insight into the pre-flight preparations and the launch experience. The space show was listening in as the launch time approached.
All right, good evening, everybody. This is Paolo Nespoli. He's an astronaut speaking from the European Space Agency establishment of ESRIN in Frascati, Italy. We are here all together tonight to witness the launch of a Soyuz. Specifically, will be Soyuz TMA-09M, so the new version of the Soyuz, and the beginning of Expedition 36. Crew members will be Commander Fyodor Yurchikhin, Luca Parmitano, he's an astronaut in the Italian nationality, Luca Parmitano, and Karen Nyberg, NASA astronaut. The launch is scheduled in a little bit less than an hour. We do have the control center, our control center in Munich, Columbus, call CC online. They are telling us that everything is under control, weather is fine, everything is okay, and so far we are all go for launch. So we are all looking forward to witness this the beginning of the new Expedition 36. We do know that everything looks okay. It's a beautiful, gorgeous evening in Baikonur. It's summer there. I was there in May, and I can tell you that at that latitude, May, it's already hot. It's like being in Houston in May, so very hot. Differently than winter, when you get really snow and very cold. When I launched more than 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, it was December and it was minus 23 centigrade. So this will be a very interesting launch. It will be the second time that the Soyuz capsule will actually dock to the station in what is called, technically speaking, and I'm reading because I'm not really familiar with this, I was not trained on this, same-day docking. This is before when we used to launch and have to wait 48 hours inside a capsule before we went up there, and now they are trying for the second time this quick, fast track to space station. So this is going to be very interesting. I think a lot of you have seen launches on the shuttle. The preparation time in Baikonur is relatively similar to what happened at Cape Canaveral in the shuttle. So there is 15 days before the launch, there is a commission in Star City that actually tests to the crew. The test is a multiple phase test, both on the launch itself, then a handling of the space station, then on malfunctions concerning docking and manual docking, and also concerning manual landing in case it would be needed. So the examination is pretty interesting, pretty convoluted, a lot of things. It's very interesting in Russia how this developed. In any case, after this, the crew is ready to depart for Baikonur, not before having taken a couple of days off, usually with the family, just to reestablish their pace, to slow down a little bit after the fast 2-year pace that lead up to the examination. And then there are a couple of activities that are traditionally done in Moscow before the departure for Baikonur. Notably, these are the visit to Red Square on the Kremlin Wall, where there are the tomb of Yuri Gagarin, or the final resting place of Yuri Gagarin, and Sergei Korolev, the father of the Russian cosmonautics. And so we all, as a crew, we all go there and put flowers to acknowledge these two very important figures. And then from there, a little tour on the Kremlin grounds and then back to Star City, because next morning, traditionally speaking, there is a breakfast. A breakfast that is done with the whole astronaut corps. It's actually handled by the crew. The crew offers the breakfast to everybody. And then from there, you jump on a bus, go to the airport, take an aircraft, a Star City Gagarin Cosmonaut Training Center aircraft, and arrive in Baikonur. It takes several hours. Baikonur is pretty far away. It's not right around the corner from Star City, from Moscow. It's about 2,000 kilometers southeast of Moscow, actually, and a country that today is Kazakhstan. So it's kind of interesting as the Cosmodrome of Baikonur was established in what it was Kazakhstan, part of the USSR, the Soviet Union, and today it's in a different country. So it's a little bit of interesting situation there. The territory of Baikonur itself is actually Russia. But the rest around, it's, of course, Kazakhstan. So there is a series of going in and out of countries, interesting situation. You arrive, the crew arrives in Baikonur about 10 days or a week before a launch, and they actually carried out a series of activities that have to do with making sure or checking out that the spacecraft is ready to go. Usually, as soon as you go there, the next day, you actually visit the spacecraft itself, which is inside the integration hall. You actually enter the capsule and start checking that things that are supposed to be there are there. You make sure that your personal things are in there. And if there is anything, any discrepancy, you have the chance to talk to the ground team to make them, ask them for corrections or some deltas. The crew also goes through the final preparation of reviewing the board documentation. We do have, usually there is a team in there with a simulator, and every day the crew is given the chance of physically trying the docking. Manual docking is very intensive. It's done by looking at a periscope, judging distances, speed, accelerations through what is called, a visual cue. And it's not that easy. It takes quite some time for this to really. The crew has to train pretty much, and is a perishable skill. That's why when the crew is in Baikonur, they are given the chance to try that even there a few days, up to a few hours before the launch. So during this period, during this week in Baikonur, activities that have to do with maintaining physical fitness. Actually, the Russians are pretty interesting. They do a kind of what they call adaptation to space environment, to microgravity. The Americans usually do not participate to this. I did try. I wanted to see what happened, so I asked permission from my ESA doctors, and I asked the Russian crew surgeon if I could also try this protocol. It's very interesting because they actually lay on a bed, which then is tilted, and you almost go, actually, you go head down, feet up for a certain period of time to get used to the shifting of the fluids inside your body. And then after a while, they flip back the table back to vertical, and your heart needs to race to keep up with the change of sudden change of pressure. Very interesting. Another thing that the crew does, another ceremony that the crew does there in Baikonur, is the planting of a tree. This was actually done and started by Yuri Gagarin. He planted a tree before leaving. Now it's amazing how you go there and you see this huge, enormous, beautiful tree, as there are the trees of the first cosmonauts all sitting there, Valentina Tereshkova. I mean, all the Leonov, all the others are all there. And then the more you go away from the place where Yuri Gagarin put his tree, the more you find the younger and younger tree until you find the one that we planted. I'm not sure exactly what happened to my tree, because we planted and it was December. I'm pretty sure, I mean, the ground was solidly frozen. So I'm pretty sure that the tree did not kind of survive the winter. We will see. I've asked some of the ESA people that are in Baikonur to take a picture of the tree that I planted, and we will see. I'm pretty sure that Karen and Luca will have planted a nice tree, and it's a good season now, so there is a very good chance that the tree will actually settle in there and then grow. So the planting of the tree, it's a very nice ceremony that's always done. Of course, Fyodor Yurchikhin already flew in space a couple of times, and he did not plant any tree because he had already one. So probably gave some water just to make sure that the tree has enough water there.
Italian astronaut Paolo Nespoli speaking in Rome last week. Although ultimately they do the same job, the American and Russian spacesuits are designed quite differently.
The progressively, so you keep going with all these activities, with some medical examination the day before the flight, up to a kind of a scrub, few hours, just before you need to leave the cosmonaut quarantine place. They actually scrub you with alcohol pads just to kill all of the potential viruses that may be lying on your skin. And then we are ready to leave. It's interesting how when you leave the any place, this is a Russian tradition, when you leave any place and you go for a trip, you should show that you're not in a rush to leave. And so we do this kind of little informal ceremony even in Star City before going to space. The way families do this is just to sit on the couch, all dressed up, all ready to go. They sit on the couch for a few minutes, a minute or two. They just sit there like they have all the time in the world. They are not going anywhere. They are not in a rush. And then suddenly after this, they go up and go. And we actually did the same for our flight, and I'm pretty sure that Fyodor and Luca actually did the same in Baikonur. You leave the compound, jump on a bus, and they actually take you to the Cosmodrome itself. It's a few kilometers away. You get to the Cosmodrome and you go into this special area where you are actually wearing the flight suit. Now, wearing a Russian flight suit and an American flight suit too, it's not just a normal suit. It's not just something that you put on and that's it. First of all, it's a very involved process. You need to have an undersuit, then to have a suit itself. The suit is to enter. We always say that we do enter into the suit because the Russian suit has a kind of hole inside here, covered with a zipper and a special closure, you actually go into the suit from this hole here in front, for this aperture, let's call it. It's not really a hole. And then once you are in and you kind of put it on, you have to close this hole with a couple of rubbers and you put it in there, zip it up. And now what they do, they go through a test to check that the suit is actually able to sustain pressurization, because if the closure inside here is not done properly, you may have a leak, and of course this may cause a problem. This whole testing of the suit is actually done in front of the guests and family member. This is very interesting. There is this special room. It's divided in half by a glass. So the guests stay on one side of the glass, the astronauts, the cosmonauts, and the technical people stay on the other side. And this is this preparation is done one by one, and then the crew has the capability of actually sitting down a few minutes and talking to the guests. So it's a very interesting process. This was done this afternoon. Everything was done with no major problems. Everything went fine. Everybody seemed to be in a very good mood. And the images that I saw this afternoon saw all the astronauts very happy, ready to be there. You see that the glove has to be the astronaut has to wear the glove before the pressure can be put on the suit, and has to close the helmet. This is a very, very interesting situation, actually, to be inside this suit. Contrary to the NASA suit, this suit is very light. The helmet does not come off. It's embedded, it's built inside the suit itself, and allows for the astronaut to wear this fairly light suit and walk fairly comfortably.
Yes, and from Rome, astronaut Paolo Nespoli is describing events in Moscow and Baikonur as preparations were made to launch Soyuz TMA-09M with three astronauts.
Your voice in the community, the Great Southern Sounds of Melbourne, 88.3 Southern FM.
In 2010 December, Paolo Nespoli was launched aboard the Soyuz TMA-20 to the International Space Station. On this evening's The Space Show, he is bringing this experience to bear in providing commentary of the launch last week of fellow Italian Luca Parmitano aboard the Soyuz TMA-09M. With the three cosmonauts now in their spacesuits, it is time for them to leave the operations building. The Russians are great respecters of tradition. Even though manned spaceflight is only 52 years old, it already has gathered some traditions that need to be carried out.
This is the standard ceremony when you go out. We go out of the area where the suit has been done. There is a formal activity where the crew members are actually presented to the commander of the base. The commander reports to the commander of the flight, which is your chicken in the middle, will report to the commander of the base and ask permission to board the spacecraft.
Now the cosmic trio will be driven by bus out to the pad and its waiting Soyuz rocket.
So the crew reports to the commander of the base and then off they go. They board the bus and they can go. Of course, there are photographers all over the place. Each one of them wants to have a picture, a smiling picture of the cosmonaut just before the launch. Those in the back are the guests from one side and workers, so the people that have worked in preparing the launch. Here is the crew departing. It is actually true that the crew stops midway and replicates one of the ceremony, one of the activities that Yuri Gagarin did when he actually flew. So the crew stops, and if they have the need of relieving themselves, they will actually do it. And then they arrive at the launch pad. It's very interesting. You do have in your hand whatever, what you see in your hand, it's a fan, because inside the suit can get pretty hot. You're not able to breathe. There is no other cooling except ventilation from that fan that you have in your head. And now the temperature is pretty high, so I guess they really need the fan, otherwise they would boil inside the suit. Again, they report to the commander of the launch pad. By the way, they are going to take off from pad number one in Baikonur, the same one that was used 52 years ago to launch Yuri Gagarin in space, the same one that is used to launch every Soyuz world crew since then. So pretty interesting historical fact there. It's like a traditional picture with the crew, and then head of the Russian Space Agency, the head of Energia, personally escorts the people to the launch pad. What you see on the right of Luca is Jean-Jacques Dordain, the crew member. Did you hear that Lutz? It's because it's tradition that the crew gets kicked in the back by the general constructor. I was not expecting this. I got this kick in my back, see? And people are thrown up the stairs. Very interesting tradition there that are taking place. Then the crew turns around and salutes, and then they are actually leaving and going.
Now, in America, very few people are allowed near a rocket. Once that rocket is fueled, even fewer people are allowed nearby. In Russia, it seems like every man and his dog is at the base of the rocket to shake the hands and farewell departing astronauts.
All right. There is a little lift up there that actually takes you in space, actually up to, you ride up, and this little lift, very crowded, very small. I think I remember one at the time or something like that. You take it, it takes up to the actual level of the launches. The launch pad is very interesting. The rocket is something like 80 meters high, and you actually go there and go into the spacecraft one by one, sit down, you go in, sit down, and then they come and strap you there.
During space shuttle missions, the countdown and launch commit were carried out from a control room at the Kennedy Space Center, Florida. Once the shuttle lifts off, control of the mission switched to Mission Control in Houston, Texas. The Russians operate a similar system.
Control center is situated in the city of Korolyov, named after the father of cosmonautics in Russia. It's pretty good. The launch itself, it is handled from Baikonur, but as soon as the rocket takes off, Tsup in Moscow actually takes control. So pretty interesting. Well, there are several control centers that I use for the control of the space station, but of course the Russian control center is the only site that will manage the launch of the Russian spacecraft Soyuz. It will take off under the control of the Russian control center, and it will go up all the way to docking 6 hours after launch. This will be the first time, or the second time actually, that a spacecraft will dock in such a short time.
As we waited for the launch of Soyuz TMA-09M, Paolo Nespoli explained the day-night cycle experienced in low Earth orbit.
Breathing in space is pretty interesting situation. You're actually flying at orbital speed of 28,000 kilometers per hour, which means that every 45, 50 minutes, depending on the trajectory, you're going to go through a sunset or a sunrise. So you need to really get used to this fast changing of time. Think also what happens in terms of temperature outside the spacecraft. You get spacecraft going through very cold temperature, so something like minus 150 degrees centigrade when it's, you are in shadow, or 120, 130, 150 centigrades if you are under the sun. So it's a pretty interesting situation.
From his experience aboard Soyuz TMA-20 in 2010, Paolo has a good understanding of what it is like to be strapped into a capsule atop a fully fueled rocket out on the steps of Kazakhstan.
Hello, hello, hello. Here we are again talking to you from Isa Esrin in Frascati, Rome, living the work that Luca Parmitano is going to do, the activities that we are going to do for the launch of Soyuz TMA-09. Soyuz that will bring in space Italian astronaut Luca Parmitano and his fellow crew member Fyodor Yurchikhin and Karen Nyberg. By now, the crew is inside the spacecraft. We have seen images before of the crew actually arriving at the launch pad number one in Baikonur, the same one that launched Yuri Gagarin 50 years ago, actually 52 to be precise, 52 years ago. And they have been escorted to the launch pad by the head of the Russian Space Agency, head of Roscosmos, and they have been given the usual traditional salute before they actually go up of the rocket, which is actually a kick in the back. This was pretty astonishing when I got it myself, so but very interesting. It takes about half an hour for the crew to get inside the spacecraft. Of course, the spacecraft is very, very small. There is only the volume in there. It's relatively, really small. I would guess it's something like a meter, a circle of a meter 50 with a lot of stuff in there, and it's high about a meter 20. So you're laying in there, three astronauts, fetal position, your legs pulled up to your chest because simply you cannot put them down. And right now, there are a few things that the crew is doing. They are done some checks to make sure that the spacecraft hatch has been sealed properly. Spacecraft can actually sustain pressure. This obviously is very important because as soon as the rocket will lift off, the atmospheric pressure will diminish very rapidly, and if there is no seal, then of course, obviously, they will have a problem. This will actually lead to an interesting situation, will actually lead to an abort. It's not a real nice situation, but the crew wears pressure suits. So in case of this kind of malfunction, the pressure suit will actually stop and hold and prevent that the crew will have a problem.
Nespoli was able to explain to us what the crew aboard the Soyuz TMA-09M spaceship could see on a display screen.
Let's go back to the images from Baikonur. What you see here, it's a retransmission of one of the screen of the Soyuz capsule. So this is what the commander and the flight engineers are actually looking. Very interesting. These are the data that are given at the last moment for the orbital insertion. So you see there the orbital parameters that are calculated at the last moment. So this is a pretty interesting situation. And so the video switches from outside video
to hopefully inside. The International Space Station is a project involving many Northern Hemisphere nations. Surprisingly, astronauts have to visit some of the nations during training.
Very interesting seeing the summary of the training of Luca with all the activities that were performed at the various training sites in the United States, in Russia, in Europe, mostly in Cologne, at the European Astronaut Center, but also in Tsukuba and in Canada, where we do train for the robotic arm, manipulation of the robotic arm. You have seen that Luca will actually perform two spacewalks. This is planned. This is very good. It's the first time that an Italian astronaut will have the opportunity to perform a spacewalk, and this will be a very good way for Europe and Italy to acquire more knowledge and know-how on this delicate activity.
Once the three cosmonauts are inside their spacecraft, there is very little for them to do as they await the launch.
I'm looking forward to when they will show us some images from inside the spacecraft. We probably will see the astronaut and cosmonaut laying in there, all strapped up, all ready to go, flipping through the pages. It's actually very interesting because the flight data file on board, it's made of regular paper, so when you flip through the images or the pages in with your gloves, if you're not careful then you kind of tend to rip off all the pages, so it's a very good and interesting situation. I think that the excitement in Baikonur in Moscow has reached already the maximum level, and it will go even higher if possible. It's going to be very, very interesting. I would say that from the astronaut point of view inside the spacecraft, this is a fairly quiet moment. You're sitting there looking at the book, making sure that you have done everything properly. I would say that there is very little fear, actually, contrary to what people think. I was really grateful to the fact that I was able to get there and sit there at the rocket, because, you know, I know that something would have happened in the last day, something would have gone wrong, then I could have been removed from flight, and all my work and effort for the previous year would have gone down the drain. So sitting there, it's very interesting, and it's exhilarating. You're really glad to be there. You don't see the moment that this is going to start. So
online all the time at southernfm.com.au.
This is the Space Show. This evening we are covering a launch of Soyuz TMA-09M as seen through the eyes of Italian astronaut Paolo Nespoli.
And here we are back again from ESA ESRI, the European Space Research Institute in Frascati, Rome, which means that we have a few minutes, let's say 4 minutes to the launch. This is a moment in which everybody is really collecting their thoughts, collecting their technical knowledge. The crew is inside the spacecraft, has reviewed all the procedure, all the systems are go. The activities that have happened in the past couple of years for Luca and the rest of the crew training for this intensive mission, they will carry out the usual amount of experiment, scientific, technological, and educational experiment, but also they will have a number of technical tasks that they need to have to carry out, maintaining the station, but also receiving spacecraft. We will have a commercial spacecraft dock into the station, as they will have a supply vehicle, an ATV, a European supply vehicle, and also Luca will carry out two spacewalks to prepare the station for the arrival of a new Russian module. So a very intensive 5.5 months that will make really good use of the onboard resources. At the end, we astronauts are onboard resources, and we do work, and they try to maximize our time as they try to maximize all the resources like electricity, water, oxygen, and so on. A few seconds before the liftoff, the engines are started. It takes 7 or 8 seconds before they go to 100% of their nominal power, and after that, there he goes in a fiery ball of a strong fiery ball of power.
We are now in the final minutes before launch. In America, this is called the countdown, with a commentator calling down the seconds to ignition and liftoff. The Russians do it differently.
10 seconds to launch. Here we can hear the engine start. There we go, pressurization is starting. And we should have liftoff. There we go, ready, and that this is really liftoff. There it goes, Soyuz TMA-09M with the crew of Fyodor Yurchikhin, Luca Parmitano and Karel Nyberg, taking off from Baikonur exactly on time, center of the launch window. It will be a ride of 8.5 minutes to space. Very interesting launch on the Soyuz. The acceleration starts building up. This is what we call the first stage. First stage, it's until let's see, 33 minutes and 22 seconds, so another minute and 15 seconds of first stage. And then the first stage will actually detach, so all the rockets that are strapped on the Soyuz will actually come off and fall to the ground, and second stage will burn from there. So let's see. We do have another 45 seconds, actually, to the end of the first stage. Of course, the crew at this point are is sitting in there, laying in there, preparing themselves for taking the acceleration in the best way. Acceleration goes up to 3 to 4 Gs, depending on the situation there. So we have about 20 seconds to first stage. Let's see if we actually see the change of colors of the rocket when the stage separates. I'm looking at the images very carefully. Of course, it's night. It's very difficult to see this separation. Separation should happen now. And in fact, see, there is a dim on the light and the new lit up of the first second stage. So here we go.
One of the joys of watching a Soyuz spacecraft launch is the sight of a fluffy toy or two dangling on a piece of string above the cosmonauts. As Paolo explains, this has a purpose.
There is the image from inside the capsule. You see Luca Parmitano all the way down there. It's lifting the hand with a thumb up. In the middle is Fyodor Yurchikhin looking at the flight data file and with the stick manipulating, inputting the data on the onboard computer. Those two little toys that you see hanging there is something that the cosmonauts always do. We traditionally bring up some little toys from our families, from our kids, and we hang them there. We call them microgravity or a gravity indicator. You see them, they are really lower down, strung down. That means the gravity is pushing fairly hard on them, and they will indicate when you reach microgravity, or if there is a malfunction on the engine, you can actually see those little toys starting floating. So it's a secondary measurement, an indirect measurement of the force of gravity. Let's see. Second stage separation will happen at 36 minutes and 11 seconds, so just about 1 minute and 20 seconds from now. It's interesting from inside the spacecraft that every time there is a new stage, which means that the engine will turn off. One engine will turn off and the other one will start. You feel like there is some kind of a braking and accelerating of the spacecraft. You are jolted inside your seat. Of course, you are laying in there, you are bolted down, you are strapped down, so there is nothing much you can do in there. So here we see the images. Now we see Karen Nyberg. There are two cameras on board of the Soyuz, and it's foreseen that mid of the flight, for about a minute, the flight engineer number two, which is actually the seat of the kind of passenger or research cosmonaut, a crew member that does not really have many tasks during launch, that foreseen that during this period the cosmonaut number two, in this case Karen Nyberg, is actually shown. You still see the little toys hanging up there, swinging really hard, indicating that gravity, that the acceleration is really pushing hard. In fact, they are going in space, and they are now. There we go. That was what you saw exactly. That is staging. And that was 36:21, exactly at the time that it was foreseen. That staging, did you see the little toys floating up and down? That is exactly what I was telling you before, is this sense of being jolted forward and then being squished back because of staging, change of stage. We are now on the third stage. Third stage will actually go for 4 minutes. It's supposed to go all the way to 40 minutes and 12 seconds. In this phase, the acceleration starts building up pretty fast and pretty strong. This is when you really feel the 3.5 G, 4 G that are pushing against your chest. Starts even being a little bit difficult to breathe. You need to be careful laying properly because you will have difficulties in moving, in reaching controls, in doing things. So this is pretty nice. Everything is going fine so far. We see everything looks okay. Of course, we don't see from here what they see in their control screens, but I'm assuming from everything that I see that things are good and there are absolutely no problems. You see those toys straight down, pulled pretty hard. That means that there is a moment, actually, that the gravity is actually pulling strongly, and it's not gravity, to be honest. It's actually the acceleration that the spacecraft is actually going. At this point, they'll probably have closer to 4 G in there, so it will be pretty strong. Just about 2 minutes and 15 seconds to third stage separation. Third stage separation is actually the moment in which they will actually reach space. I think we will have live images when you will see the astronaut kind of jumping forward and the toys floating around. That means they are in space. They reached orbital altitude about 240, 250 kilometers. Then they will have to do some more burns to reach the altitude of the space station to correct their trajectories. But they are in space. They are definitely in space.
Rockets with a single engine or cluster of engines cannot reach space. They just don't have enough energy to do so. A single rocket would have to carry the entire mass of the emptying fuel and oxidizer tanks all of the way into orbit. To get around this problem, rocket engineers put one or two rockets on top of or alongside of the base rocket. Each rocket is called a stage. The vehicle is a multi-stage rocket. The bottom right rocket is ignited first and carries the stack up to a certain altitude. When this first stage has exhausted its fuel, it is jettisoned in a process called staging. This relieves the launch vehicle of the now dead weight of the empty tanks. The engines of the second stage now carry on the task of lifting the spacecraft into space. Some rockets have up to 5 stages. 2 or 3 is the norm. Soyuz has 3 stages. That is what Paolo Nespoli was describing when he referred to staging.
Imagine the amount of energy, the push that you need to have to start from zero and to arrive to a place where you're actually going at 28,000 kilometers per hour.
Luca Parmitano's role during the launch was not a passive one.
Is Luca Parmitano, he's an astronaut of Italian nationality. He is the flight engineer number one, which essentially means the co-pilot. Flight engineer number one is actually trained to take control of the spacecraft in case the commander is incapacitated. The flight engineer number one.
The crew of the Soyuz spacecraft have several indications that they have reached orbit.
I think that they are in space. Yes, exactly. They are in space. 2042, they are in space. Have you seen the little toys floating around? Have you seen the astronaut jolting away? And Luca is actually closing actually operating the pressurization valve. So, very good. They are in space. Very good. Congratulations. Godspeed, the crew of TMA-09M. Godspeed, Fyodor Luca and Karen. Expeditions 36 started with a big bang, I would say, where they are in space and they are on their way to space station.
Most of the Soyuz missions to the early Salyut stations, to the Mir space station, and to the International Space Station took 2 days to reach their destination. Every so often during those 2 days, the cosmonauts would fire thrusters on the Soyuz to adjust their orbital trajectory. Eventually, they would draw alongside the space station, matching its velocity. Then they would dock with it. However, for only the second time, things were different on last week's mission.
They will actually follow a pretty new profile that will bring them to space station in an accelerated manner. Technically speaking, it's called same-day docking, and it will see them, it will bring them all the way to space station in 6 hours. Used to be that you have to float around in space for 48 hours before you can go in space, but now, before you can actually reach the space station, now they will do this.
After reintroducing himself, Paolo had more to say about this rapid rendezvous and docking.
Good evening. We are here again from the European Space Research Institute in Frascati, Rome. But here in Rome, weather is good, as it was in Baikonur, Kazakhstan, where a few minutes ago we saw the launch of the Soyuz TMA-09M carrying Fyodor Yurchikhin, Luca Parmitano, and Karen Nyberg as the crew of the new Soyuz that departed. They are going to go in space, have an accelerated launch track, and actually dock on the space station in 6 hours. It's less than 6 hours. This is pretty good. So far, we have seen all the activities work as a clockwork, going as expected. Station is not that far away. This is fairly unusual for the launch of the Soyuz, but it's the new and latest and greatest shortened docking approach and docking process. This is done so that the crew actually does not have to wait so long before going in to the station. The Soyuz is very cramped, it's very little, you cannot do much in there. Also, on the other side, though, you can rest and adapt better on the microgravity environment. So I think there are pros and cons about staying 2 days or docking to the station so quickly. But this is what they're going to do today. And obviously there is a celebration in Russia now for another success launch of the Soyuz spacecraft. There were many, many, many launches. If I'm not wrong, Soyuz in total now launched something like 1,700 times, more or less. So it's a very well-established spacecraft. Let's see what we can say about this 6 months mission, Expedition 36-37. This mission will actually be a pretty standard space station mission with a lot of activities. Luca is fortunate; it will be doing a couple of spacewalks. There will be spacecraft arriving to the station, a new commercial spacecraft. There will be an ATV, a European vehicle arriving to the station. So everything is on time on schedule for Luca to actually be very useful in station, carry out a lot of experiments. He has a very good complement of experiments and a lot of operational activities. This will be a very interesting mission. Through this mission, ESA and the Italian Space Agency can actually acquire more knowledge, capability, know-how, and in the future, we will use this knowledge and know-how to keep going and still going in space. We don't know. Maybe we will. Actually, I'm pretty sure soon, sometime, we will think of going to Mars. So, let's see. We are still online with Star City, actually with ZUP. There will be a few more activities from ZUP.
We have already described the function of the Mission Control Center. Paolo explained why NASA has a backup control center in Moscow.
I think this is the little control center that is located inside the TSUP. So NASA has a little control center actually in Russia, embedded inside the structure in Moscow. This is in case there is a problem with Houston, a loss of communication, or even a hurricane. They happen that a hurricane came to Houston and they have to activate that center to maintain a station.
The International Space Station is one of the world's largest cooperative scientific and engineering endeavors.
I am Paolo Nespoli, Italian astronaut. I actually flew 2 years ago on the space station, and I'm living, looking at these images, living what I felt 2.5 years ago, actually. It was pretty interesting, pretty amazing. Pretty good going in space on this very little spacecraft, a little bit cramped, a little bit Spartan, but very functional, very essential. And it's really interesting that today the Americans, if they want to go in space, they actually have to get a ride from the Russians. It's interesting, and that shows that a partnership, even an apparently odd one, like the one from the United States, Russia, 10 nations in Europe, Canada and Japan, can actually build something as complicated, as difficult, as technologically challenging as a space station. You know, it's not very easy to put all these people together, decides on issues, decides on priority, decides how money needs to be paid. But at the end, when you go through all this pain, you get a project that is fairly solid. And the space station today is fairly solid, is there to stay until at least 2020 to keep providing us a outpost in space where there are conditions like microgravity that you cannot find on Earth. And through those conditions, we actually can carry out a lot of activities that you cannot do here on Earth. We can do scientific research, we can do technological research, we can do educational activity. This without counting all the spin-offs that we are having, because we are pushing technology, because we are trying to go where it's impossible to go. You know, when you try to do something so strange, so impossible, you end up building machines that are more performant, that are lighter, that are better, they are less complex, they are fixable in cramped and environment where there are not that many resources. So essentially, we learn a lot of things from a technological point of view. We learn a lot of things from an educational point of view, from an industrial point of view, even from a political point of view when we look at the whole political environment where we operate. So space station is a very useful environment that allows us to do a lot of activities.
During his commentary of the launch of the three-person Soyuz TMA-09M craft, Paolo Nespoli pointed out to a world map where in the Korolev mission control room, we could see the ground tracks of the spacecraft and the space station and where the day and night parts of the world were.
For when you are in space, then day and night chase themselves pretty fast. You go around the Earth in about an hour and a half, and so every hour and a half you get a sunset, and every hour and a half you have a sunrise, so 16 sunsets, 16 sunrises per day.
By now, the Soyuz TMA-09M spacecraft was carrying its three occupants across China and Japan and eastward out over the Pacific Ocean. For the next 6 hours, it would be chasing the International Space Station.
The crew is working pretty hard now in trying to in setting up for the docking. The docking will happen, let's see. I think it's 4 o'clock, 4:16 Central European time. This is the time that is planned for the docking. It's a pretty fast docking. It's the second time that the crew that the Soyuz TMA is doing this process. Again, this is done so that the crew does not have to spend so long time on the Soyuz. It also, by the way, allows for the Soyuz to dock on the station, keeping an extra day, an extra day and a half of life, because the Soyuz can only be active for 4 days. So if you spend 2 days in space, and you spend 2 days to go to the space station, then the life of the Soyuz is reduced to 2 days. But if you go on station in 6 hours, then you still have an extra day and a half to be used in case of emergency, in case of problems, or anything else. So this is a way to use resources more accurately and be better. And this is the way we work on a space station.
At this point, it was time to leave the three astronauts to get on with their orbital tasks.
I think here from ESA ESRIN, the European Space Research Institute in Frascati, Rome. For the moment, I'm going to say goodbye to you. This is Paolo Nespoli again from ESA ESRIN, signing off for the moment, and we'll see you later. Ciao.
The Soyuz TMA-09M successfully docked with the International Space Station last Wednesday. The three astronauts joined three others already living aboard the space station. Now, the music we played at the beginning had a reason. Valari is the name of this mission. The Italians have given this mission of their astronaut the name Valari, which is Italian for to fly. Well, this space show special was written, edited and presented by Andrew Rennie. We thank the European Space Agency for covering the launch and Paolo Nespoli for his insightful comments. But right now, it's time to hand over to Mark Norman and Purple Haze.